Genesis chapter 28, if you want to open your Bibles there. Lonnie and Austin told me this morning that I stopped 10 minutes too soon Wednesday night. I didn't realize, so I must have been sick, because I thought that I went all the way up until the start. I felt reasonable, so it wasn't that I got sick or something. It was just, I was just out of it, so I'm sorry about that, but as if I can make it up today, right? We'll just do 10 minutes more. I'll say it for some other time. All right, we're ready for Genesis chapter 28. Just say, I want to take a look at one thing before we get there. I think Mr. Allen had asked the other day about ages, like how old was Abraham, did he see Jacob, and Esau be born, and all that. So I put this little chart together. Here's the key. Oh, man. It's kind of late. Okay, A is Abraham, obviously. So Abraham, 175 when he's dead, which makes Isaac 75 when Abraham dies. Well, Isaac was 60 when Jacob was born. And so Jacob and Esau were 15 at the time Abraham died. So I thought that was interesting. A couple of things that we'll look at along the way. This kind of helps me kind of put things together. I did not realize that Isaac would have still been alive when Joseph was sold into slavery. And so, you know, thinking about the ages that they were. And some of this, there's not a passage that says Jacob was however old when Joseph was sold. You just kind of have to do some of the math and put it together. I thought that was interesting, that Isaac lived 12 years with Joseph sold into slavery, and then never knew that, at least this side of eternity, never knew that Joseph was actually alive. And later on, I'll do a similar chart with Jacob's ages with Joseph's, how old he was in Egypt, but we're not that far yet. So you can take a look at that for a moment as we so in Genesis chapter 27,
Jacob goes in and deceives Isaac in order to receive the blessing. Now, we talked about this, that the promise had been made to Rebekah that the older would serve the younger, that Jacob would receive the blessing that had been promised to Abraham and then came down through Isaac, and it would go to Jacob. And it was not without precedent that the younger son would be receiving the promise. And even still, as we look forward into the future, Jacob's fourth son, Judah, will be the one that through whom the seed will come. And so these blessings it's not just tied to whoever the oldest son is, but it's tied to the one who God chooses. And very often in these circumstances, God is choosing someone in order to illustrate and demonstrate His power. When He chose Abraham and Sarah, He chose an older couple, the wife of whom was barren, and they were living in another land. And God said, you come to this other land, and I'm going to show you, I'm going to make you a great nation. And the same thing with Isaac. Though we don't have the same kind of blow-by-blow account, we know that Isaac, there was a 20-year span in which he was waiting on Jacob and Esau to be born. And then the promises also come through Jacob. Well, now Jacob has gone in, and he has deceived Isaac in order to receive the blessing. Esau comes in, and he is obviously upset about that. But then, as Esau is angry, he is fleeing, and he makes it, as we see in verse 10, Jacob left Beersheba and went towards Haran. And I believe that I have a map here. So this is Shechem, which is Beersheba is down here in the south, and Haran is up here. This is an Abraham map, so don't have Beersheba on here. But Beersheba, and then he flees to Haran. This is where Laban and his family live. But he came to a certain place that night because the sun had set. So obviously he can't travel any further because it's dark. I want you to look at one thing in 32:26. 32:26. They are coming back, Jacob is coming back from Haran towards the land of Canaan. And it said, then he said, let me go, for the day has broken. And you see a really big transition in Jacob's life right here. So here he is fleeing and the sun sets. And on the way back, he wrestles with God, and the day breaks. And it is really like a new day in the life of Jacob. He's a different person in many ways. And so then he meets Esau. So think about the differences in the circumstances. In chapter 28, he's leaving Esau because Esau wants to kill him, and the sun sets. In 32, the sun rises, and he meets Esau, and they embrace as brothers again. Okay, so anyway. And he takes one of the stones and puts it as a place to lay his head. And he sees this ladder. And what's going up and down the ladder? Angels. Okay. And so Jacob sees this. And the Lord stood above it. I take it to be at the top of the ladder. So here's the ladder. And it's my text says it was set upon the earth. What does yours say something different than set upon the earth? Okay. Everybody says something like that, set upon. The idea is like placed towards, so that it's a ladder coming from heaven to earth, more so than being from earth to heaven. So it's a ladder that God is placing towards the earth. And here the angels, the messengers of God, are ascending and descending on it. And the Lord here makes the promises to Jacob that he had made to Abraham and they had made to Isaac. I am the Lord your God, the God of Isaac, the land on which you lie, I will give to you and your offspring. Your offspring shall be like the dust of the earth, and you shall spread abroad to east and to the west and to the north and the south. And in you and your offspring shall all families of the earth shall be blessed. So that's the promise that we're concerned about primarily as New Testament Christians. But see, it's coming down through Jacob. And this is not just Jacob's scheming that the reason that God makes this promise to him. In fact, it might be in spite of Jacob's scheming that God makes this promise to him. But because God had chosen before the children were ever born through which one the promise would come. Isaac had not said anything about the blessing of the seed passing through him. But here God affirms that. And so he says, I'm going to be with you, and I'm going to keep you wherever you go, and I'll bring you back to this land, for I will not leave you until you have done what? Till I have done what I promised you. Now, think about this. If our math is correct, which it may not be, but if our math is correct, Jacob is 77 when he leaves. Unmarried, no children, fleeing the land God is promising to give him. There's an unlikely candidate to fulfill these promises in, right? And so it's almost the exact opposite of Abraham. Abraham has been called from Haran to leave and come to Canaan. Now Jacob is leaving the land of Canaan and going back to Haran. And it's to this one that God says, I'm going to fulfill these promises through you, even though he had not been a blessing so far to his brethren. Right? So far, he had brought a curse on Esau. Okay. So there's two sets of promises here. There are the Abrahamic promises, that kind of threefold formula, the land, the nation, and the seed. But there's also these promises about his immediate situation. I'm going to be with you wherever you go, and I will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I've done what I've promised you. And so there's promises with Jacob that I'm going to be with you right here in this situation. Okay, Jacob wakes up and says, how awesome is this place? God is here, and I did not know it. This is the gate of heaven. And so this place he names it Bethel, and he dedicates the place, pours oil over the stone in order to dedicate this to God. And he says in verse 20, if God will be with me and will keep me in this way that I go and will give me bread to eat and clothing to wear so that I come again to my father's house in peace, then the Lord shall be my God, and this stone which I have set up for a pillar shall be God's house, and all that you give me, and of all that you give me, I will give a tenth to you. There's a couple of ways we can take this. The first way is I think maybe the... upon first reading, it might sound like Jacob is saying, well, if God does everything he says he's going to do, then I'll serve him. Then I'll obey him. But I don't think that communicates the attitude of Jacob right here. Jacob is awestruck by God right here. He's not in a bargaining position with God right now. I think he might be saying, if after all I have done, God is still going to take care of me, and provide me food and clothing and bring me back to this place. If God cares about me like that, then I will make this place, when He brings me back to this land, I will make this His house and I will give Him a tenth of all of that I possess. So I think it's an if-then statement only in the sense that if God is really concerned about me like that, then I owe Him the things that I have. And so I don't think it's much as like a bargaining position, like He's saying, well, if you really do that, God, then I'll take care of you. But just the awe that I cannot believe God's going to do that for me. And because He is, I'm going to do what I ought to do.
See, in verse 17, it tells that He is afraid of God.
Yeah, right.
So I don't think He's trying to do a bargaining.
No, I think that's a great point. Yeah. Okay. And so, you know, something is interesting about Jacob here. Up until now, he's been a getter, a grabber, right? His name meant he'll. But now he says, I'll give. He's gone from a grabber to a giver. And this scene right here is what made the difference. The idea of this, the ladder going up and down. What is God trying to communicate with Jacob? And I think God's words help us understand what He's saying. But what's your impression of this dream?
Well, it actually says in 17 that Jacob thought it was the game of the
hell. Uh-huh, that's right. Yeah, so why would God, you know, kind of open that up and show that to Jacob? Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And to show that God was concerned about Jacob and that there was access between God and man. That God was concerned about humanity and that there was a pathway and that God had created that pathway. That it was not something that that man had to kind of contrive on their own, but God had opened up a way. Now, in this is just a shadow. because in John 1:51, Jesus says that you will see the angels ascending and descending upon the Son of Man. And the idea here is that Jesus is the ladder. And that the access between God and humanity that God has opened up is Jesus Christ. And that was true for the patriarchs too. I don't think we often think about that, but the way that they are justified is the same way, were justified, the same way we're justified. It's just they were justified after the fact in some way, because their faith was in what was coming, and our faith is in what has come. Okay. Yeah.
And, he doesn't have a home anymore.
Sure.
And it's almost as if God's saying, I know your circumstances, mm-hmm. I'm aware of what's going on, but I'm still with you.
Yeah. No, I think that's exactly right.
Follow through with what I said I would do.
Yeah, I think he is stabilizing Jacob's faith and saying, I'm going to be with you, and shows him this ladder, I think, as a visual representation of that promise. That's great. Okay, so let's go to chapter 29 then. If somebody else has something on 28, that's great. Okay, chapter 29. So Jacob goes on his journey, and he comes, we find out he comes near to Haran. And there is this well, and there's a large boulder over the well. And these fellows come with their sheep, and they're bringing their sheep to water them. And he says, do you know Laban, the son of Nahor? Now, who is Laban in relationship to Jacob? Do you remember? His uncle, right? So it's Rebekah's brother is Laban. And so they said, we know him. Is it well? Yes. And here comes Rachel, his daughter, with the sheep. And so he says in verse 7, behold, it is still high day. It is not time for the livestock to be gathered together. Water the sheep and go pasture them. But they said, we cannot until all the flocks are gathered together and the stone is rolled from the mouth of the well. Then we water the sheep. And so it appears that there was some kind of agreement so that certain shepherds and their sheep didn't get ahead of other shepherds and their sheep. That everybody waited until they were gathered together and then they would roll the stone away. But Jacob sees Rachel coming, and what does he do to the stone? He rolls it back. Now, people suggest that this is indicative that Jacob was a pretty strong fellow. Because the stone that would have covered the well would have been sufficiently large in order to, you know, to just keep anybody from coming and just rolling it off. And so he rolls it back and waters the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. And Jacob kisses Rachel and wept aloud. Now, if this was a Hollywood movie, this would be love at first sight, right? This is, but I don't think that's what's happening here. I think what's happening here is he's greeting her like a first cousin, because you know that's what she is. So I don't think this is he's just entranced by her from the first time, but. Instead, it's greeting her as family here. And Jacob told Rachel that he was her father's kinsman and that he was Rebekah's son, and she ran and told her father. Now, Laban runs again. Do you remember Laban running to meet Isaac? I wonder if he anticipated seeing the same thing this time that he saw that time. What did he see last time when he ran and met, well, he actually met the servant, not Isaac. But when he ran and met the servant, what did the servant have with him? 10 camels full of stuff, right? So maybe he has that a similar, okay, here's Rebekah's son. We're going to get rich again. And runs out there, and what does Jacob have? Like a staff, right? He has almost nothing as he comes back. And but Laban, it still seems is happy to see him. So he says, surely you are my bone and my flesh. And he stayed with him a month. And so he's evidently working for Laban and helping him around the farm. And he says, well, you know, surely you shouldn't serve me for no wages. So you name your price and I will give it to you. Jacob sees the two daughters of Laban. There's Leah and there is Rachel. And Jacob loved Rachel, verse 18. And he says, I will serve you 7 years for your daughter, Rachel. Good, Laban says. I'd rather give her to you than anybody else. And so he worked 7 years, and they seemed to him but a few days because of the love he had for her. Now, I take that to be that when you're waiting on something, sometimes time seems to kind of slow down, right? Like, if somebody told me I had to wait 7 years to marry Lydia after I met her, I would have been like, boy, that's going to be an agonizing 7 days. But I think it is the idea that the cost seemed as nothing, right? He said, 7 years, if that's what it takes to get her, it seemed as nothing. I've heard it, so I may have even said before that it's kind of like, the days just flew by. I don't know that that's necessarily what it's saying. I think he's saying Jacob was happy to pay that in order to be able to live with Rachel. Jacob says to Laban in verse 21, after he's worked for 7 years, give me my wife, which must indicate that they were in some kind of betrothal, right? For him to be able to say, give me my wife, and not say, give me the woman I want to be my wife. Give me my wife that I may go into her for my time is completed. So they have a big feast, they have a big wedding. You know the story, right? Jacob goes in the night. I don't know how you don't notice this, but he didn't, and gets up the next morning, and behold, the text says it was Leah. Now,
well, it says in verse 22 that Laban actually made a big feast, so he was drunk.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, it was dark,
Was there a possibility that that's the reason he didn't know the difference between the two daughters?
Sure, yeah, yeah. Yeah, you're right. I think that's a valid point. Jacob realizes the next morning, regardless, and says, you know, this is not what we had agreed upon. And so Laban says, well, around here, you're not allowed to marry the younger daughter first. And I can imagine Jacob saying, well, it would have been nice to know that 7 years ago, you know. Thanks for telling me now. So this is just a lame excuse on Laban's part. We'll see several lame excuses on Laban's part. But do what?
The tables have turned
Oh, yeah, yeah. And this is exactly right. So we were talking about the consequences of Jacob's deception. And you say, well, it seemed to work out pretty well. He got the blessing. But look at the number of times that he's deceived or tricked or something along the way and other consequences that he has to face. So it doesn't just all work out perfectly for Jacob. And he is deceived as much as he deceives. And maybe in some cases even worse so, at least in the short term. But you're exactly right. The tables have turned. Yeah.
And the thing about this is granted, Rachel may not have been on it, but Leah would have had to have been on the deception from Laban in
yeah.
the first place.
Right.
So therefore, it goes right back to him and Isaac and Rebecca.
Yeah. Yeah, is there something similar about an older child being passed off as a younger child or something, you know, a younger child being passed off, I guess it's reversed, but one child being passed off as the other child in order to be connected to the blessing. It's a sad state of affairs, the deception of both of them. So he says, complete the week of this one, which I take to be more or less, you know, finish the honeymoon period. It wouldn't technically be a honeymoon period, but it would just be inappropriate for you not to complete this week. And then we'll give you the other also in returning for serving me another 7 years. But he completed a week. Then Jacob is given Rachel, I mean, within that week. And then he serves for 7 years. As a child, I learned that this was, he served 7 years and got Leah, then had to work 7 more years and got Rachel. That's not how it happens. He served 7 years, gets Leah and Rachel within about a week, and then served 7 more years in order to pay back Laban. I mean, he had nothing, and so this would have served more or less as the dowry, I think. I don't think we should see in Laban asking for 7 years of labor as something like ridiculous in that culture. I think it was probably a pretty reasonable request. Normally, you would pay some kind of large dowry. He doesn't have that, so what he's going to do, he's going to work 7 years, and that will make it, that will even it out. But his deception here is certainly something not to be applauded. And it also, the text also mentions that Zilpah is Leah's servant and Bilhah is Rachel's servant. So we just need to know that. Okay. He loved Rachel more than Leah and served Laban for another 7 years. I want to suggest something here. As we go through, I want you to think about Jacob's estimation of Leah and Rachel. And then maybe what we would think God's estimation of Leah and Rachel would be. There's nothing clear in the text. But I also think we see Jacob's attitude change a little bit in all of this. And this does not end up like the maybe Hollywood love story that we would have thought. Where he sees Rachel, love at first sight, and he just, you know, is infatuated with her his whole life. Instead, I think it's more like he is infatuated with Rachel at first, but then through time he grows to love Leah, maybe even more than he loved Rachel. And there are certain things along the way in the text that I certainly think God's choice was Leah. Jacob's choice may have been Rachel, but we'll look at that as we go along. Okay. One thing that I do want to note right now, when they die, Rachel, they were within reasonable distance of burying her at Machpelah, and Jacob does not. And when Leah dies, he takes her and buries her at Machpelah, the family tomb. That says something to me about who Jacob wanted to be there at the end. So to what extent that just says definitively, well, Jacob's attitude completely changed, I don't know, because he still favors Joseph and Benjamin. So it's not like his attitude completely switches. But I think he does come to appreciate and love Leah even more so than he did at the beginning. Okay, so in verse 31, we begin the narrative here of the children of Jacob. And I'll put these up here. This might, if you haven't memorized these, this would be a good thing to memorize. And maybe in this order, going, you know, down the left-hand column and then down the right-hand column, because that's the order in which they were born. And it also, it's pretty much by the woman by whom they were born. Leah has two spells, I guess, because two periods of bearing children. So that throws her into the middle there. But the Lord saw that Leah was hated and opened her womb. This is an interesting way. I think it helps us to see sometimes how the Bible uses the word hated. Notice in verse 30. So Jacob went into Rachel also, and he loved Rachel more than Leah. And then in verse 31, when the Lord saw that Leah was hated, that is in comparison to Rachel. I don't think that Jacob just hated her guts, right? But the idea is that he loved her less. And so sometimes when the Bible uses the word hate, it means it in that sense of love less. Okay, well, yeah, okay, great. Very, thank you. I appreciate that. So she conceives, she bears a son, and she names him Reuben, which my footnote says, see, a son, because she said, because the Lord has looked upon my affliction. Listen, for now my husband will love me. You see in Leah a longing to be accepted and appreciated by Jacob. But you also see in her recognizing the Lord's hand in this. She knew that the Lord had done this for her. That the Lord had seen her affliction and had given her a child. Notice in verse 33, she bore a son, and says, because the Lord has heard that I am hated, he has given me this son also and named him Simeon, which means heard. Again, she conceived and bore a son. Now this time my husband will be attached to me because I've borne him three sons. Now she doesn't say anything about the Lord there, but she still is concerned about being attached and receiving appreciation from Jacob. And she conceived again and bore a son and said, this time I will praise the Lord. And I think it's interesting. This time she doesn't say anything about Jacob. Now she has, whatever happens with that, so be it. This time, I'm going to praise the Lord. And so Judah's name means praise. So three out of those first four, Leah recognizes the Lord in the process. That it is the Lord's hand in doing this. And you see her in almost all of them, except the last one, longing for the appreciation for Jacob's love. Now, Rachel sees this. What does she do? What? Yeah, she envies her sister, goes to Jacob, listen, says, give me children or I shall die. And Jacob says, am I in the place of God who has withheld you from the fruit of the womb? Now, I want you to see something here. When we see Isaac, for example, wanting children, he goes to the Lord in prayer about it. Verse 17, after Leah has gone through this period of time where she has not borne any children, verse 17, and God listened to Leah and she conceived and bore Jacob a fifth son. It appears to me that they go to the person who can control the womb and petition him. Rachel goes to Jacob and in envy and anger says, give me a child. There's only one thing good said about Rachel in this whole book. It's that she was beautiful. That's it. That's the only good thing. But Leah, we see all along, she's recognizing the Lord's hand. Rachel does not appear to quite so much. And so she says, well, here's my servant Bilhah. Go into her and bear children. And she does. So Dan, and it said, and she says, so with Dan, it means judged. And the idea is that God has judged me and heard my voice and given me a son. Listen to the difference between how Rachel is referring to Dan and how Sarah referred to Ishmael. Rachel is calling Dan her son. Sarah never did take that kind of ownership or responsibility for Ishmael. So you could see the tension immediately. But this situation, I think, is different. And so Rachel says, the Lord has judged. In other words, I think she's saying that the Lord looked at our situation and determined that I was in the right here. I'm not so sure about that. But she at least, she named him Dan anyway. And then Naphtali. And then she said, with mighty wrestlings I have wrestled with my sister and have prevailed. So she called his name Naphtali, which means wrestlings. So listen, her focus is on her fight between her sister. I think that's an interesting dynamic that's at work here. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. I don't think that the way to correct this bad situation is by throwing more wives into the mix. You know, that doesn't generally seem to be the way to fix things in the Scriptures. And so, but Leah, she sees this, and if we've got this competition still going, so neither party is innocent in this, right? So she sees what's going on. She says, well, I'll give Jacob Zilpah, and Zilpah bore a son. And Leah said, good fortune has come, and called his name Gad, which means, obviously, good fortune. And Leah's servant Zilpah bore Jacob a second son, and Leah said, how happy am I, for women have called me happy. So she called his name Asher, which means happy. Now, sometimes the meaning, it's more like they sound like the word for. It's not exactly like the word Asher is happy, but it sounds like the Hebrew word for happy. Okay, if that makes a difference to you, I don't know. Okay. So in verse 14, interesting situation. I don't know all that's going on here, but there's Reuben found some mandrakes in the field and brought them to his mother Leah. Rachel said to Leah, please give me some of your son's mandrakes. But she said, is it a small matter that you have taken away my husband? Would you take away my son's mandrakes also? Rachel said, then he may lie with you tonight in exchange for your son's mandrakes. When Jacob came from the field in the evening, Leah went out to meet him and said, you must come into me, for I have hired you with my son's mandrakes. So he lay with her that night, and God listened to Leah, and she conceived and bore Jacob a fifth son. Leah said, God has given me my wages because I gave my servant to my husband. So she called his name Issachar, which means wages or hire. Now again, Leah names this son based on what she thinks God is doing. I'm not so sure that she's right about this. Leah said, God has given me my wages because I gave my servant to my husband. I'm not sure that that was something that God was like really grateful for. You know, wow, I'm really glad you did that, Leah. Thank you. Now here's another son for your trouble. I'm not sure.
Well, you know, when you get all down to the very end, mm-hmm. I mean, these sons are of the 12 tribes.
That's right.
So it's actually fulfilling God's prophecy of of his blessings that's going to Jacob because of Abraham.
Sure.
And even though it may not have been done in the right way, since God already knows the beginning and the end, he already knew what was going to happen, even though he knew him free will.
Yeah. Now, you know, I think that's interesting. All the way through this, we see the poor decisions that Abraham and Isaac and Jacob made almost always turn out for their good. And it's because God is controlling this in order to use them to be a blessing. And that, I think there's a lesson in that for us, that the hero of this story, you know, as even as we're teaching this in children's classes, the hero of this story is not Jacob. Jacob's not the hero. The hero of this story is not Leah or Rachel. The hero of the story is God. God is taking all of this and he is fulfilling his promises even through the deception and the wickedness and the polygamy and the distrust that these folks show. God is bringing about his promises. Now, sometimes these people show great faith and we ought to indicate that. And we ought to point that out and say, look, here, when people put their trust in God, they are successful. But God is bringing about his purposes, as Mr. Steve said, even through the poor decisions that these people are making. So she conceives again and bore a sixth son. And Leah said, God has endowed me with a good endowment. Now my husband will honor me because I have borne him six sons. And really, this is her final son. But you see in her words there, kind of summarizing her experience with all these sons, giving God credit, God has endowed me with a good endowment, and longing for her husband's affection. Now Jacob will honor me. And then she also bore a daughter named Dinah. I imagine that there could have been other daughters in all of this. But Dinah is mentioned because of something that's going to happen in chapter 34. So that she's mentioned here. But I think it's quite possible that there were other daughters involved. All right, now verse 22. Then God remembered Rachel. And God listened to her. It appears now she has changed. And now she's appealing to God and not to Jacob, necessarily, because what's Jacob going to do about it? And opened her womb, and she conceived and bore a son, and said, God has taken away my reproach, And she called his name Joseph, saying, "May the Lord add me another son." What's your impression of her words there? There's at least two right answers.
Well, in 23,
yeah,
when it says that God has taken away my reproach,
mm-hmm,
I think that she sees that from the way she's changed her attitude against her sister and actually towards God,
mm-hmm,
that he allowed her to have a child from the way she started treating God,
sure,
in her actions. By how she was living.
Yeah, she has at least started to petition God in this. So that's interesting. Anything else? What about verse? What about what she says in verse 24? What do you think?
She may be including Joseph as another son from her handmaid.
Yeah.
Or she's going to say, "Maybe he'll come bless me with another son."
Yeah, I think that's what I think she's saying. The second one, "May the Lord add to me another son." I think she acknowledges God, but I think there's a little bit of ingratitude here. That we're still in a little bit of a competition. And Leah has six. And if you count the ones by Zilpah, she has eight. And I only have one or three. We'll see more about that later. I want to make mention of Benjamin here. When he is actually born, Rachel names him... let's see. Ben-Oni. Which means son of my sorrow. And one commentator I read said that the implication of that name would have recalled what he did at birth. In other words, she was practically naming him, "I killed my mother." And Jacob won't have it. Right? That's why he changes his name to Benjamin, the son of my right hand. So there's still something about Rachel that for some reason, in me is just off. there's nothing here, obviously, that we would say, point to a text and say, God approved Rachel or Leah and not Rachel. But there's just, along the way, there's certain aspects of Rachel's character and all this. We're going to see more of that when she steals the household idols and then lies to keep from giving them up, et cetera, et cetera. There's just a lot of things along the way. Now, Jacob has prospered as far as children go. Within, about 14 years ago, Jacob was 77 with no children, and now he has at least 13 children, 12 sons to carry on his name. And this is really when we see the nation promise kind of, hit high gear. Because up till this, we've had Abraham who had one son of promise. And then we had Isaac who had one son of promise. And as we see through these children, all of them are going to be the ones through whom the nation is built. And sure, only one is going to be the one through whom the seed comes. But all of these are going to create the nation of Israel that bring about that. I want to make mention, Leah's children, Levi, the priesthood, and Judah, the kingship, and the Messiah. Point indicates something, I think, about the promises coming through Leah. And God cared about who the wife was in these things, right? If he didn't, then what was the problem with Hagar, right? God cared about who the wife was along the way. Okay, so as soon as Rachel had born Joseph, Jacob said to Laban, "Send me away that I may go to," listen, "my home and my own home and country." He recognizes that where he is not where he's supposed to stay. That's something good about Jacob. He recognizes he's supposed to be going back home. There was a fear on Abraham's part that if Isaac went back to Mesopotamia, that he wouldn't come back. That same fear doesn't seem to be there with Jacob. He recognizes that he's going to have to go back to Canaan. In fact, he wants to. But Laban doesn't want him to go. Now, why does Laban not want him to go back? Yeah. Jacob has blessed Laban practically just by being there. His presence has meant that Laban has grown in livestock. And in verse 30, verse 28, Laban says, "You name your wages and I will give it. Jacob said, the Lord has blessed you, said to him, you yourself know how I have served you and how your livestock has fared with me. For you had little before I came, and it has increased abundantly, and the Lord has blessed you wherever I turn. But now when shall I provide for my own household also? In other words, Laban wants this to be kind of on the same terms that it has been. Let me just pay you a wage, right? Up till now it's been wives, but now it'll just be, you know, a normal wage, I guess. And Jacob says, wait a second. Look at how much the Lord has blessed you. Don't I have the right to, from what you've been blessed out of, provide for my household? And Laban obviously understands that because he doesn't argue. And he says, what shall I give you? Jacob said, you will not give me anything. If you will do this for me, I will again pasture your flock and keep it. So he goes through and he says, let me go through and get the spotted and the speckled sheep. In the Near East, as I understand it, these would have been the exceptions. Most of the time they would have been solid colors. So the spotted and the speckled would have been the exceptions. Now, for Jacob to say, give me the exceptions as my wages and that's how I'm going to prosper, is a step of faith. God had said, I'm going to bless you and I'm going to prosper you. And now Jacob says, and he's going to do that by using the exceptions and build up my flocks in that way. And so he goes through and he has, go ahead.
Also, by him doing that, Laban sees that they, that many animals that are speckled.
Yeah.
And he says, sure.
Sure. Yeah.
Deal.
Yeah. Well, and listen to this, that Jacob was supposed to be the one who divided the flocks, and Jacob was supposed to be the one who kind of controlled all this. But Laban takes his flocks 3 days' journey away. He's the one who separates them, first of all, and then takes them a 3 days' journey away. In order, he doesn't trust Jacob. maybe he's got good reason for that. But I also think that it is Laban kind of reading into Jacob what he would do in this situation, right? Because people who are connivers think everybody else are going to connive too. Shyksters is the, you know, shyksters think everybody else is a shyster too. Lydia didn't know that word earlier this week, so she learned it. Okay. Sorry, Lydia. Okay. So he takes these sticks of poplar and lays them in front of the sheep. The idea, again, this is like, I've read this in commentaries, but how do they know all this? I don't know. But the idea was that whatever the animal was looking at, whatever pattern it had, would be the pattern that was imprinted on the baby. And so whether or not that was just kind of like, it wouldn't be urban myth, but urban whatever. Whether that was just like an old wives' tale then or not, Jacob uses it, and God, through that, he is able to bring about, so when the stronger ones are about to mate, then he places a stick there. But when the weak ones are, he doesn't. So that his herds are stronger than Laban's. I think it's interesting. Let's look at 31, 9 through 12. I'm out of time. I'm really not going to take extra 10 minutes, I promise. But in 31, 9 through 12, he says, thus God has taken away the livestock of your father and given them to me. Jacob does not think that it was through some kind of magic that this happened. He does not think that it was through some kind of superstition that this happened. He understands that God is the one who has taken the flocks away from Jacob, from Laban, and given them to him through this process. And so he gives credit to God. And God keeps his promise to bless him not only with children, which he does in abundance, but also with herds, which he does in abundance. Okay, we'll look at chapter 31, Lord willing, Wednesday night. Thank you so much for your participation.